With the sixth pick in the 2014 NBA Draft, the Boston Celtics select Marcus Smart from Oklahoma State University.
This is Marcus Smart from the Boston Celtics, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Marcus Smart, what a spin move and a finish. Hard to handle Marcus Smart, whether he's outside or inside the paint.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, 107.3 FM, 7:50 AM. It's a Wednesday edition of the show, the eve of the NBA draft, and things have been absolutely crazy over the last 48 hours in the NBA. And of course, Jazz fans are gearing up for not one but two picks in tomorrow night's draft. Trade rumors floating around galore. Jimmy Butler, Paul George still out there on the wire. We're going to talk about that and more with our next guest. He's from bballbreakdown.com. James Holas, kind enough to join us from time to time to talk some NBA basketball. James, great to get you back on today. Thank you.
Hey, man, and I actually have some work to talk about, so I'm actually feeling like a real NBA kind of personality now, so yay.
Look, you're one of the best basketball minds that I know. That's why we have you on the show time and time again. Speaking of the work, though, you do have an NBA Draft Roundtable article on bballbreakdown.com. I highly recommend it for anyone gearing up for the NBA Draft tomorrow night. Great content in this article.
Yeah, man, I was lucky to be joined by the likes of Coleswicker. I think everyone should know him from the Step Back, and he's a real good draft guy. Our good friend Jabari Davis was kind enough to join me. Torquil Bang and Morton, make sure I get his name right, Morton Jensen, who they're both from B-Ball Breakdown, and we all got together and we just talked about the analyze some prospects, and I ranked them. So when the rankings come out terrible, yell at me or yell at them, but they gave me some really good insight into all these prospects.
One of the guys that I know you're very high on is Dennis Smith Jr. Tell me about this guy. I know he's going to be a top 10 pick in the draft tomorrow night. 6'3", 195 pounds, average close to, I believe, 20 points a game. I've seen the comparisons thrown out there, Dennis Smith Jr. and Baron Davis, and I actually don't mind that comparison at all. When you talk about a kid like this, he has the potential to be very explosive at the next level.
Yeah, not just he's a scorer on like all three levels as far as he can shoot the jump shot, he can get to the rim, he can get to the free throw line and draw fouls. He's very physical, yet he's very athletic. The only holes I see in his game, I guess, are, you know, a little loose with the ball and not really a great passer. But he has all the tools, man. He has good size, even though he's 6'3". I think his wingspan isn't the greatest. I think he has like a 6'5 wingspan. But no, he's a really, he has like kind of all-around package kind of play where he can be a dynamic, you know, Dame Lillard-type player, and maybe even better. You know, maybe play some defense. He has the tools for it. So I'm really high on him. I like his skill set.
I like him a lot, and I bring him up first because there's so much hype surrounding the point guard position. Let's be honest. Four out of the first 10 picks in this draft, hands down, will be point guards because, you know, Markelle Fultz is going to go number one. Lonzo Ball is going to go number two unless the Lakers somehow move that pick between now and tomorrow, which I don't see happening. De'Aaron Fox is going to be a top five pick, be it Phoenix or Sacramento. And then you have Dennis Smith Jr. So he's kind of on the outside looking in from the other players that I've just mentioned. They've kind of still they managed to steal all the spotlight surrounding the point guard spot. Yet again, he's a top 10 talent in this draft. That's why I'm so interested in his game and to see where it goes at the next level.
For sure, man. I think a kind of a shadow pick that a lot of people have been talking about maybe going top 10 is Malik Monk. Even though he played two guard and off guard in college, I mean, at his size, he's going to be a lead guard or a point guard in the NBA, and of course, he's going to be an offensive-minded, score-first kind of guy, but he's one of the easiest scorers I've ever seen, where it seems like he's kind of coasting through the game, and next thing you know, he has 25, 26, and that's in college. His range is legit for the NBA, so that's Malik Monk, but going back to Dennis Smith Jr., yeah, the fact that I think in a lot of drafts, he'd probably be up there, you know, talking about the number one pick, and this draft is so deep in guards, and guys like Malik, I think, you know, Markelle Fultz. I understand why he's number one. I personally have guys like even Donovan Mitchell and Dennis Smith Jr. I take them in front of Lonzo Ball, but that's just me.
Yeah, I would disagree with you on that. working for a Utah Ute affiliate station, I watch a lot of Pac-12 basketball. I got to be honest with you. I was blown away at watching Lonzo Ball throughout the regular season. And to be honest, a lot of people in Westwood still have a job because of the Lonzo Ball effect. And I think I can directly correlate his success at UCLA to the fact that TJ Leaf may just be a top 16, top 17 pick in tomorrow night's draft. I think a lot of that has to do with the Lonzo Ball effect offensively at UCLA.
And this is something I was just watching. I'm watching some TJ Leaf film, and we wrote about him too. He was such a good college player. Like, I get that Lonzo was the face and the guy at UCLA, but TJ Leaf was every bit as much, that success of that franchise was every bit as much with TJ Leaf as it was with Lonzo Ball. I just don't know how that translates as a pro, and I don't know if he has the defensive tools to be an excellent pro, but he was an excellent college player.
UCLA had some, they had some players last season. Again, I think you are right that it was highlighted with Lonzo Ball, but looking at the offensive numbers with Lonzo, I'm quite high on the guy. Look, I think this is the most talented point guard class we have had. Boy, we're talking roughly, 10 to 15 years, right? I mean, it's been a long time, James, since I can remember this much talent in the point guard spot at the top of the draft.
I hope so, and that's what it seems like right now. But as we know, I mean, I think almost not every draft we say this. We know some drafts are bad. But, you know, there's so much promise going into the draft. It's going to take a couple of years for those players to kind of fill into who they are. And a lot of times the reality is nowhere close to the potential. But, I just from the looks of it right now, yeah, this draft looks to be really deep. And not just at point guard. There's some really good wings, guys like, or even, you know, small ball power forwards. Jonathan Isaac, even Josh Jackson, they're both going to play 3-4, and they both have really high upside.
Again, our guest right now is James Holus of bballbreakdown.com as we preview tomorrow night's NBA draft. James, let's talk about the Utah Jazz. They have not one but two picks in tomorrow's draft. I'm quite shocked that they have hung on to both of those picks as long as they have. They do have a few movable assets. The one in my mind is definitely Derek Favors going into the final year of his contract, making $12 million next season. To me, that's a very movable asset if you want to pick something up with him and tag him along with the draft pick. Yet, the Jazz have made no moves yet. I want to make Jazz fans perfectly clear of one thing. Dennis Lindsay does have a history of being somewhat of a mover on draft night. Do you believe the Jazz keep both of these picks?
The Jazz are in a really weird spot, right? Because I think they're kind of on the cusp of either moving forward into more maybe greatness with Gordon Hayward and what they do with George Hill, and they got decisions to make, and even Derek Favors. Or they can pivot the other way, and they got these picks, and they can go younger or package these picks and players, and maybe get some more assets. So, but like you said, I think last year, right at either draft day or the day before, they moved their pick and ended up bringing in George Hill. So it's definitely a possibility. But I mean, hey, do they use these two picks and get younger in case Gordon Hayward's on his way out? That also makes sense. It's really hard. It's hard to call it.
The last time the Jazz had two picks in the first round, if I'm not mistaken, they made a trade that right now does not look very good. It was when they moved, it would have been Gorgui Dieng along with Shabazz Muhammad for Trey Burke. I believe it was the last time the Jazz had two picks in the first round. They did move up. They took Burke in the top 10. One guy, James, that I really would love to see Utah roll with is Semi Ojeleye out of SMU. This is a kid who started his career at Duke, for those who are unaware. He seems like a guy that can play both forward spots at the next level. 6'7 forward, has tremendous range, averaged about 20 points per game last season. And again, if you followed SMU, American Athletic Conference regular season and tournament champions last year, this is a kid that I think the Jazz could definitely use, even if they keep Gordon Hayward. He's a guy at 24 if they keep that pick. That's why I'm begging the Jazz to take at 24.
Yeah, man, I watched some film on him, and the guy, I mean, how do you not love his game? He's a horse. He's big, he's strong, he has really good touch. Seems like he has a lot of defensive upside. So, yeah, if you're picking, was it 24th?
24th, yep.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely, that's a high reward, low risk kind of pick. And, it hedges in case you do have personnel move on. And if not, he's great for backing up both the 3 and the 4. You can't really go wrong. I think he's a home run pick.
Actually, I got to correct myself as well. The last time the Jazz had two picks in the first round, they actually selected Dante Exum and Rodney Hood. So this is not the first time since the Trey Burke trade that the Jazz have had two picks in the first round. They grabbed Hood at 23. So Dennis Lindsay has found somewhat of great value, I guess you could say, in those picks 20 to 30, which at the end of the day, if you're a fan, that's all you can ask for, right? A value pick between 20 and 30.
For sure. I mean, you want to get a rotation player, and if he turns out to be an above average kind of starter, then you've done really well with the 20 pick in the 20. So that's another thing to look out for is that Rodney Hood. And tell me if I'm wrong. He was dealing with a lot of injuries last season, and he never really seemed to get into a groove. I'm still really high on him. And I'm still pissed that the Celtics passed on him. So that's another reason for optimism in Jazz land.
I love Rodney Hood. You're absolutely right. Dealt with some injury problems last season. Never really found his groove in the postseason, but I would expect Hood to make a big jump next year. As far as other trade rumors from around the league go, I mean, yesterday we talked about Porzingis. I don't know if he actually gets moved from New York. Seems like a toxic situation. But the two headliners, the two guys that everybody knows and I think that everybody's going to be watching is Jimmy Butler and Paul George. In your opinion, are these guys moved within the next 24 hours?
I just saw a report saying that Indiana's backing off the draft talk. So Paul George might wait till later in the summer, right before the season starts. And Kevin Pritchard is trying to establish some kind of leverage here. I don't know how he plans on doing that when PG already said I'm out of here. But kudos to him. The Jimmy Butler talk, it's been going on for years now, and it's starting to fall on deaf ears. So I think the first one to move will probably be Paul George. I think neither one of them will be on the move before the draft. But I will say, just to make a throw a prediction out there, my hot take, if one moves before the draft, it's going to be Jimmy Butler and it's going to be to Boston.
As far as Paul George goes, the move made yesterday between the Lakers and the Nets, where the Lakers moved D'Angelo Russell, and they also moved Timothy Mozgov, which, again, that was the big move. You get rid of a $54 million elephant that sits in the corner of the room that you just cannot ignore. Outside of that, was that trade done with the hopes that two low first-round picks would be enough to tag along with Julius Randle and Jordan Clarkson to get Paul George? And if that's the case, and they don't get him before tomorrow night's draft, did the Lakers still win that deal, or did they come out okay in that deal with Brooklyn?
Well, yeah, and as you know, and your listeners probably know too, the real focus is clearing cap for next summer. The fact that Lopez comes off the cap next summer at $23 million, it's going to open up a lot of space. So even, let's say, Paul George, if he comes next summer, they don't make a move for him, and he comes, they have room for almost two max slots. And I guess the rumor is they're looking at LeBron James, which sounds really far-fetched to me, but so did him going to Miami, and so did him leaving Miami to go back to Cleveland. So we never know what LeBron James is thinking, but the unrest in Cleveland at least put some smoke to that fire. So I think even if they don't move for Paul George now, which I think Lakers should, they should try to package something to get Paul George in the house now so he doesn't have outside distractions and then has to turn his head. They should get him now. But even if they don't, I think the Lakers still made a move that makes sense. I know it's very unpopular, but it makes sense. I could see why they did it.
I did not spend a lot of time on the show yesterday talking about Dwight Howard because this trade happened right at the end of the show, but I'm going to go back to it right now. This guy has now played on five teams in the past seven seasons. Your take on Dwight Howard. I mean, I really don't even have an open-ended question to ask you about it. Your take on Dwight Howard and the move to Charlotte.
It's kind of sad. I like Dwight Howard, and I respect his game, but ever since he moved on from Orlando, his career has been kind of in a tailspin. It's been about more off-court stuff than what he's done on the court, and he hasn't been bad on the court. But ever since the back surgery, he hasn't been the same player, and we watched him go from the most feared defender in the league to being a salary dump for players like Miles Plumlee, or one of the Plumlees, I don't remember which one it is, one of the Plumlees and Marco Bellinelli and like the 41st pick. And I think people are now forgetting how great of an athlete and a talent Dwight was in his prime, because people don't like him. Let's be real. They don't like his joking personality. They don't like the fact that he forced his way out of Orlando. So, yeah, it's sad. He's a Hall of Famer, but he has probably one of the hollowest, most unsatisfying Hall of Fame careers as far as from a fan perspective of any other player I could think of.
James Solis, again at bballbreakdown.com, joining us right now. James, before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
You can find us over at B-Ball Breakdown. I just wrote a draft piece with a bunch of help from some really good, smart guys. I'm also part of it. We just did a roundtable about the offseason and some of these moving free agents. That's going to be dropping here probably today or tomorrow. And we got some offseason stuff coming. And that's really it. That and Twitter, where I just run my mouth all day.
Yeah, you're entertaining on Twitter to say the least. Before I got to ask you one more question. Give me the order 1 through 5 tomorrow night. James Solis, if I had to put you on the spot, I'm putting you on the spot right now. If you were a betting man, 1 through 5, how does it go tomorrow night?
Easy, of course, at the top. Fultz is going 1 to Philly. Ball's going 2. I think Boston wants Josh Jackson, but from all reports, he doesn't want to come work out for them. So Ainge might force his hand. So I'm going to say, this is me being optimistic. Ainge will force his hand and going to pick him. So he'll be 3. Phoenix has 4. Oh, my goodness, it's tough. In fact, you know what? I'm going to keep it simple. Jason Tatum goes 4 to the 3 to Boston. Josh Jackson goes 4. And then 5, who has the 5th pick? Sacramento?
They go Fox, right?
I'm sorry?
They go Fox, right, at 5?
Yeah, I was thinking either Fox or Dennis Smith Jr., but it seemed I think Fox. I think you're right. I'm going to go Fox at 5 to Sacramento.
James, I always look forward to our conversations. Thank you again for taking out the time to join us. Enjoy the draft tomorrow, and hopefully we can catch up with you next week and talk about some aftermath.
Thanks for having me on, man. I will admit I'm kind of bummed because I don't know if I trust Jason Tatum. So,
I think you're going to be okay. I like Josh Jackson a little bit more, but again, look, cheer up. You got assets galore for the next, 3 years. It's okay.
Yeah, I guess. It's like thinking you're getting a brand new – he has the number one pick. It's like thinking you're getting, a brand new Lexus, and you open up the garage door, and it's a 90s – it's a 2016 Camry instead. Not bad, but it's just not the same.
Is that kind of what Cleveland felt like when they took Anthony Bennett number one? That's like opening up the garage and having a Ford Escort, right?
That's like opening up the garage and it's like a beach cruiser with one tire missing.
Yeah. So it's okay. Cheer up. I think Boston's going to be just fine.
Yeah, I know. All right, my man. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. We got to take a break for just a moment. We have more Drive Time Sports coming up after this.